Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Spiritual Happy Hour here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jennifer Lajotis, and today I'm so excited. Our special guest today is Sue Frederick. Sue is the best-selling author and intuitive coach out of Boulder, Colorado. She's written 3 books, Bridges to Heaven, True Stories of Loved Ones on the Other Side, I See Your Dream Job, and I See Your Soulmate. And Sue's been an intuitive since childhood, and she draws upon dreams, ancient numerology, powerful intuition, and conversations with spirit to help her clients fulfill their soul mission and use their pain as inspiration for a meaningful life. Her work has been featured in New York Times, on CNN.com, in Real Simple, and The Yoga Journal, and in Natural Health magazines. She's trained more than 500 intuitive coaches, and I'm one of them. And she's been a guest on more than 200 radio and TV shows. And so I'm so excited she's here today. We're going to be talking about her latest book, Bridges to Heaven, True Stories of Loved Ones on the Other Side. If you want to speak with Sue towards the end of the show, the guest call-in line is 347-326-9921. And for anybody that's a new listener, the show Spiritual Happy Hour is a show about intuition and how to connect to our authentic selves and how to be our authentic selves and use our intuition in our everyday life. So, Sue, again, welcome and thank you for coming on. I'm really excited to have you. I think your work is healing and life-changing for all.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here with you, Jen.
I know we're going to be talking about your work around grieving and grief and loss. And you and I just talked about this, but I'd love to share a story with our listeners. I've known Sue and worked with Sue or trained with her as a coach, I think going on about 5 years now. I started reading your book about five years ago.
Gosh, has it been that long, really,
yeah,
Jen?
Yeah, and at some point, if you come on and talk about career, I've got a story for that too. But I had a girlfriend who passed away from colon cancer about a year and a week ago to the day. And it's interesting, Sue, because I took the Bridges to Heaven coaching seminar with you about 2 months before she passed away. And I knew I was taking it for work with clients, but more so I knew from an intuitive perspective, I was taking it for my own healing. Mm-hmm. When my girlfriend passed away, she has 2 young kids. They're the same ages as mine. So one is 9 and one is just turned 8. My sister, who never knew my friend, had been a nanny for years. She had quit her nanny job and moved back into teaching because she had started as a teacher years and years ago. Hurricane Sandy kind of rolled through the East Coast 9 months before my friend passed away. And my parents live on the water, so their house got damaged in Hurricane Sandy. So my sister quit her job to help them recover from that. During that time, she was going to try to get back into teaching. So she talked to another friend of mine and helped her redo her resume. But she shared with that other friend that she really wished she could find a nannying job that she could sort of settle into, but she hadn't found the right family. So after my friend passed away, my other friend gave her information over to my girlfriend that passed away's husband. And my sister is now their nanny. And as it comes full circle to me, I stood there thinking, wow, our friendship was special and important, but it really had nothing to do with me. It had everything to do with her children and their well-being after she passed on. And I know, Sue, we're going to get into life mission and soul agreements. And I stood there, again, really with your coaching seminar fresh in my mind, and I have to tell you, I'm getting chills right now, but just it really helped me with my own grief over my girlfriend because I was heartbroken. But at the same time, right, I stood back in awe, and I said, oh, my gosh, we are so connected in so many divine ways that we have no idea. And, I mean, when you just think back how the wheels with Hurricane Sandy that we all thought was a tragedy, and it all kind of lined up, so my sister was ready to step into this when my friend crossed over.
I think that beautifully illustrates what we talk about when we talk about divine order and how everything is actually moving forward for all of our highest good, even though we cannot see it at the time. And that's a great example. I mean, divine order says that there are soul agreements in place here that we cannot begin to comprehend because we're viewing it from the limited world perspective of the physical world. But from the divine realms, looking at it, it's just this amazing, connected, energetic world of things moving forward to help all of us evolve as we should. And when we can begin to pull out of our, I call it our ego lens view of the world, our small view, and into our divine lens, we can really begin to accept that, yes, there are things way beyond what I can understand that are happening, that are moving forward in alignment with divine order.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just absolutely, it amazes me all the time. Obviously, this isn't your first book. You've got a book about careers and also one about soulmates or relationships. Why did you decide to go ahead and write a book about death and dying? Because, again,
it's been so helpful. That's been my greatest teacher of this lifetime has been grief. I call her Divine Mother Grief, has been my great spiritual teacher. And I've wanted to write a book on grief and loss literally since the 70s. I've been kind of trying to make it happen, and it finally was time, and the book came through. And, you know, my story is that I lost my husband when I was 29. He died from colon cancer. And then the next year, my best childhood girlfriend, Chrissy, died from leukemia. And then my best friend, Marv, and then my father, and on. So literally, for about 10 years in my 30s, I was losing somebody I loved dearly about once a year. And I look at that now as, thank you, God, for helping me see all of that, for the lessons of it, and survive it and move through it and find the light, and realizing now that all of those losses were my greatest spiritual teachers. And now what I want to do is help other people going through loss to understand what they can learn from that, why they agreed to go through that. It's a soul agreement with the person who's departed, and what they can learn from it, and then how they can help others from what they've learned.
I think it's so hard, or can be so hard, for some people to sort of say, and you just said the soul agreement, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, but after the death of a loved one, as you well know, you feel like your heart has just been ripped, you know, apart. And if you,
of course,
if you don't know your teachings, or, you know, think of it from the higher end, a lot of people will say, what do you mean by soul agreement? And what do you mean I sort of signed up for it? Can you just share with our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, I can tell you what, when my husband Paul died in 1979, even though I had the most profound experiences around that death, from everything from having Native American healers showing up from the other side during the final months to kind of, Paul was singing Lakota and all kinds of amazing things as he was dying, to the fact that when he died, it was a totally conscious, beautiful death, a story that I write about in my book, and I saw his soul leave his body. But still, after all of that, you know, when people would say, well, this is all in divine order, and someday you'll understand the purpose of this. I wanted to kill those people.
Right, you know? Right, yeah.
Because it's like, there's no way on earth I would agree to go through this. This isn't what I wanted my life to be. I had this whole idea of the white picket fence and the kids, and here I am 30 years old, and I'm widowed and kind of devastated from watching him suffer for a year. And so, no, this is not divine order. And, you know, and I did spend many, many years raging at the universe, but that's what launched me into my spiritual searching journey. I needed to find answers, you know. Why do young, healthy, loving people suffer and die? You know, why did Chrissy, who was the best human being I'd ever known, go through a torturous 2 years of leukemia and a bone marrow transplant and everything just to die at the age of 32? And there I've, you know, I work with a lot of grieving parents who say, you know, why would my 4-year-old child have to cross over at that age, you know? So, yes, from our view down here in the dense realm of Earth, the ego view, it seems very tragic, and it feels very tragic. And I'm not asking anyone who's in the midst of that, you know, to pat themselves on the back and go, congratulations on your soul agreement. But I'm asking them that as they move through that pain, as they feel it, to also find moments of quiet, try to meditate, and ask to see the purpose, ask to see the lesson, so that when you're ready, and that can be 10 years from now, or it can be tomorrow, when you're ready, you can move into the light of your mission, of what you've come to do, and use your pain to help others.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because I think death, no matter when it affects you, and the younger it affects you, I think, wow, you know, the people that have to experience death at such a young age, I feel like, boy, they're meant to do some great things.
Yeah.
But I feel like for me, number one, I feel like you're never quite the same, but exactly what you said, Sue, it makes you look inward and it makes you question, mm-hmm. what am I here to do? But at the same time, sometimes I feel like it for me anyway, and I've experienced my uncle passed away shortly after my friend did, and it makes you feel like, wow, you're almost out in the middle of an ocean, you know, and you've got to mm-hmm. find your footing again. Mm-hmm. And just trying to comprehend where they are, even knowing that you've got even greater connection, or you don't have the physical connection, but you can have a greater connection with them once they're gone. But mm-hmm. I just think it's, yeah, go ahead.
And, you know, part of the problem when we're grieving, and I certainly experienced this myself, is, you know, grief and sadness and heartbreak is a very heavy energy. And, you know, it's the reason why we say, I can't get out of bed in the morning, I'm so depressed. It's because the energy we're feeling that's in our bodies, in our heart chakra, is so heavy and dense. And, you know, that blocks us from being able to feel our loved one around us, because our loved ones come back to try to comfort us and help us and help us heal. And when our energy, I had someone say to me once in my 30s that I had a gray aura of grief around me. And, you know, from anybody looking at me in the physical world, I looked, you know, kind of young and healthy. I was very healthy and fit and all of that. But he could really see that I had this gray aura of grief around me. And he said, you know, you've got to release that. And until you do, you can't even connect to the guides and the loved ones around you who are trying to comfort you. And I feel like a big part of moving through grief is even just to recognize that if I raise my energy a little bit, let's just say that for 10 minutes a day I'm going to meditate, try to quiet my mind, and try to open my heart. You know, Jen, how we talk about that break your heart wide open meditation that I teach in my book, where you move some of that pain out of your heart and release it, cry it out. That starts lightening your energy. And then and then to call for divine guidance and to ask your loved one to speak to you. Once your energy is a little bit higher, you're thinking of all the moments you shared with your loved one, that you had a wonderful time when you were loving them, when they were loving you, and you're filling your energy with those happy memories, those feelings of love. Now you've opened the door for them to be able to speak to you and comfort you, and you be able to receive it and feel it.
Right. Yeah. And how does our own intuition, and you're sort of describing it, come into play? Because if you're not intuitive, exactly the steps that you just gave, right, is going to help us, that opening of the heart, realize that we have our own intuition, and that, as we spoke about in the beginning of the show, unfortunately, that moving through that death is there to help us remember what we came to do and our soul mission. Can you speak a little bit about that, Sue? Just how?
Yeah, there's so many things to say about that. For one thing, if anybody's listening and they're grieving, I just want to say, if Divine Mother Grief has chosen you as her student, it means you're a highly evolved soul, and you came here for this moment to experience this awakening to your higher self, because grief will rip you apart to get you to look for deeper meaning, to say, who am I? Why am I here? What is life about? Why do people suffer? And those are spiritual questions. That's what we have to ask here. And if we don't ask those questions, we forget who we are. So grief is the great awakening, because the pain is so terrible that you literally can't move. You can't get through a day unless you're trying to find those answers, unless you're saying, I'm going to figure this out. There has to be another reason. Even people who may have gone to church all their life and listened to sermons and thought that that was good enough, when their heart is ripped out from grief, you know, I speak to these people all the time. They say, you know, nothing my priest is telling me resonates or makes me feel any better, right? And so they're suddenly now going, the church is not answering my questions.
Right.
I have to look deeper. And that's when we move from religion to spirituality. We get out of the box of dogma of religion, and we go on the spiritual journey of saying, maybe I'll read this book on quantum physics. You know, maybe I'll take this meditation retreat weekend. Maybe I'll do all these things out of my comfort zone and ask different questions than I've asked before. And that turns out to be the greatest awakening moment of your life, and it changes everything.
Yeah, absolutely, because you always speak of pain as fuel. And mm-hmm. I remember reading those words in all your books and just saying, thank God, Sue, you wrote that, because you kind of make life and the hardships of life make sense. You know, that, mm-hmm. that our pain fuels us. It makes us refocus on what we're here to do. And you know,
that's such an important thing, because we have such this myth in our world, you know, and especially in the American culture, that we're here to be happy, to collect things, right? You know, to have this great life and to live happily ever after. And of course, joy and love is a huge part of being human. It's part of what we come to experience here. However, when we agree to drop into this physical world, we're also agreeing to feel the pain. We're agreeing to feel the heartbreak, because the blend of the joy, the love, the heartbreak, the pain, the disappointment, all of that, that mix, that huge mix of things we're going to experience here so passionately, is how we evolve. It's sort of like when you go to the gym to work out and you say, I don't feel like working out too hard today. I'm just going to go over here and maybe just do a slow treadmill thing, you know, and that means you're not going to be building muscles. It means you're not going to be expanding your cardiovascular. In order to get the benefits of that workout, you've got to put effort into it, and it's got to kind of hurt, you know? And that's sort of what life is like here. We come here for the workout. We come here to learn. We come here to expand. And that takes effort, and it takes accepting the pain. Just like when you go in the gym, you know, and you do that exercise and suddenly your abs are killing you, and you can either go, oh my God, that's horrible, I'm never coming back, or
right.
you can go, all right, that's good pain, you know, next time I'm going to push harder. And, you know, that's what you got to learn. You just got to learn that sometimes you just got to look at it as, okay, this is my lesson. I'm accepting it with grace. I'm going to learn what there is to learn from it, and I'm going to push through it. And that's going to take me to a new level of awareness in my life. And thank you, Divine Order, for teaching me what I need to learn.
Right. And also, Sue, you talk a lot, too, about surrender. And I absolutely love that, because I think there's a part of us, like you said in the beginning of when you were just talking about how we have this myth about the world being fantastic and the fairy tale ending, et cetera, and so on. And I think with grief, there has to be that point where you finally say, okay, I surrender. You know, I can't control it. And even
right.
whether it's after a loved one has departed or before, if they're fighting
right.
an illness, especially a terminal
yeah.
one, and,
yeah.
you know, you can see it. I've now had so many people pass from cancer that I can see. I feel like I can see what's happening, what's going to happen
right.
coming forward.
Right.
And your words again have helped me so much to think, oh my gosh, surrender. Just go with it. Enjoy the person or the time that you have now. Let it go. So it can unfold.
Yeah. And Jen, that brings us to this whole idea of how we look at death in our world, in our culture. And, you know, death in our culture is a tragedy, really.
Right.
You know, you watch the news and it's like, oh, no, another person died, you know. And we just feel like, oh, well, that's the worst thing that could ever happen. And yet nobody gets out of here alive. Everybody here
right.
is going to die.
Right. 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 We
so,
all have a number
you know,
at some point.
Right, you know, and the thing is, when we can be, if we can go on a spiritual journey and begin to view death differently, and that can only happen when you are having your own personal experience of feeling the presence of someone from the other side, someone you love who has departed. I have been so blessed that my loved ones have come back and made themselves so visibly clear to me without any doubt that they were awesome on the other side and that, you know, this was the hard part here on earth, that I am so blessed that I can know in every cell of my body that, you know, life continues. It's just a changing of a costume. You know, it's the personality that we carry in this lifetime is just a costume. The body, it's a costume. And so we take it off and the soul, the spirit is free. And that happens at the instant of death. I mean, one of my favorite examples of that was my dad's death. You know, he was dying from lung cancer. He'd been suffering for terribly in the hospital. And one day, you know, my family, I kind of call myself, you know, the letting go master now, because my sister jokes that if somebody says they have a headache, I go, okay, well, don't linger. If it's your time to cross, go on.
Right.
So, if it's time to go, just go. But my dad was dying of cancer, and I was trying to get my family to accept that this was it. He was ready to go. We didn't need to try to keep trying radiation and doing all these things. He was ready. You could see it in his spirit. You could see it in everything. And so one day I sensed my dad was going to cross that day, and he was in the hospital and they were still trying to do different medical procedures on him. They wouldn't even do the do not resuscitate orders, you know, so that if anything happened, they were going to still try to revive him. So I was voted that day I had to go home and take care of all of our kids. Like me and my siblings, we all had these young toddlers, and so it was my day to go home and take care of them. So I got them down for a nap, and the first thing I did was sit down to meditate, because I've been meditating for 30-something years. And so I sit down to meditate, and instantly my dad appears so vividly, and I'm not just saying it's a picture, like his whole personality, and it was as if he were young and healthy and happy again, his old self before he got sick. He was joking around with me the way only he could joke around with me, so much so that in my closed-eye meditation, I was suddenly smiling and just like going, oh, Dad, what are you doing here?
Right,
'cause he was so real. You know, and then I went, oh, my God, Dad, what are you? I realized that he had left his body, and I picked up the phone and called the hospital, and my brother picked it up and said, you're psychic, Sue. He just had a heart attack and died, and they're all here now trying to resuscitate him. And I said, well, he's not in that body anymore. And he's free, and he's happy, and he's looking awesome, and he's already visiting me. So I instantly had affirmation that the moment that body, even while they're doing medical procedures, if that soul is done, that soul is free.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and I love how you put this in Bridges to Heaven. There's a sentence there where you said, if we could start saying the word evolve, instead of die. And I hope you get that out there, Sue. I'm going to use that now from now on, because that in and of itself is so healing. You're absolutely right. That shifts your whole thought about it, because that is what happens. We evolve.
Right.
And
you know, and it's like a graduation too, you know. I mean, I often say, well, wow, he graduated, you know. He really fulfilled his soul mission, and he's on the other side. He's celebrating. And we're here still learning.
Right. That's how I feel, too. I'm like, there's a part of me that's like, gosh, darn it. Like with my friend, I'm like, darn her to get it right that early. Gosh, darn it. Like, good for you, but how could you leave me here? But it's true. So can
but
we
that's
talk
how I always feel, Jen. I always feel like, oh, no, another part of my posse, my group
right.
of soul friends is on that other side. I just want to go with them. And then I have to go, yeah, but I'm not obviously taking my last breath, so I'm not ready. My soul has decided I still have work to do. So I'm willing to stay and keep going after it because obviously I have more to learn, and I totally trust that the moment I've really accomplished what I came to do, that the soul will exit and I'll be done. But, you know, grief makes people feel they don't want to be here anymore. It's one of the
right.
biggest things. They just
yeah.
feel like, well, then why am I still here if all the people I love are over there? And the answer to that is because you agreed to stay. And if you agreed to stay, it's because you still have something important to do here.
And do you mind, can we talk about the GPS and our phone numbers
yeah.
a bit? I would love
yeah.
to, because again, your whole framework changed my life. So I'll go ahead and let you jump in, because I love the whole part of our birthday really being like a GPS
mm-hmm.
and an outline for what we're
right.
supposed to do.
Well, everybody who studies astrology, numerology, many different of those kind of metaphysical arts, all of those things are simply gateways into understanding the soul's journey. And when we look at them the right way and use them as tools for doing that, they reveal everything. I mean, as Einstein once said, you know, this is an elegant universe. Of course, it's elegant in its simplicity. We have so many clues to show us who we are and what we've come to do, and yet our left brain logic mind deletes all of that knowledge that could be so helpful to us, and it requires stepping into our right brain creative side, our intuitive side, to trust that stuff. And our culture is dominated by left brain logic, so we're so out of balance. That's why we're out of touch with our intuition. But once you study something like astrology, numerology, even tarot, all these different things, you begin to suddenly then the doorway to the divine, to your intuition, begins to open up. And when I do people's paths, I look at, and again, I started learning this in 1979 when my husband Paul died, because a friend thought she wanted to help me, and she said, you know, I know this numerologist who does readings, so I'm going to give you a gift of a reading with her. And I had already been to the hospice therapist and the grief therapist, and none of them had helped me at all. And
right.
this
yeah.
this numerologist came into my living room and sat down and showed me my birth path, what I came here to do, my husband who had just died, his path, what our agreement was, why I was still here. It changed my life in an hour, because my soul knew that what she was saying was true. My intuition resonated with it 100%. And from that moment on, I became obsessed with learning everything there was to learn about those numbers. And I am not saying that the numbers, here's my take on it. We come in with a combination of a destined soul mission. And in that mission, it says, here's the gifts you're bringing in for the lifetime. Here's the challenges you're bringing in for the lifetime. And here's your 9-year reinvention cycles about when you're going to be changing and kicking it up to the next level. However, at every step along the way, you have free will, which means when that challenge hits you, your higher self can help you rise above it and move through it gracefully. Or your, as I say, our pitiful self, our ego self, can surrender to the negativity of it, the pain of it, and live in that negativity for as long as you want. And your choice in those moments determines the next direction of your life. And that's how I view the interplay of the destiny as revealed by numbers and astrology and the free will that we bring to it as humans.
I love it. And again, I will never forget, I was in a 9 reinvention year when my husband and I moved back from Tokyo, Japan, unexpectedly, and
mm-hmm.
I was having the time of my life, so I felt like the carpet got ripped off, you know, and here I am in
right.
America with a 5-month-old and a 2.5-year-old, And I'm thinking, how did I get here? I just had everything figured out. And then you on the phone said to me, I will never forget, same thing like you said. In 1 hour, you said to me, you're in a 9 year. You're in a reinvention year. Everything is meant to sort of either move on with you or drop off. And I went, oh, my gosh. It was so healing to hear, hear that.
And you know what it does for people? This is what I love in my workshops and stuff when we all sit down and we're mapping out our 9-year reinvention cycles and we're seeing all the changes that happen in our lives at certain times and we're discussing them. What we're doing is now we're viewing our life from our soul's perspective. We're saying, wow, when that year came along and I didn't even know it was a 9-year and I went through a divorce and a health crisis and almost went bankrupt, I had blamed myself. I thought that I had messed up and done something wrong. And now I look at that and go, well, that was just meant to be. I was meant to let go of some things in order to release the old, surrender, and step into the next level of my life and work. And when people can see those cycles and understand them, they don't have to fight anymore. They can go, ah, it's a time for surrender. It's like we look at the cycles of nature. You know, you don't go out and plant your crops in the fall, or you might plant a few bulbs, but you're not going to go out and plant all your vegetable garden in October because you know it's not going to work. You wait until spring. And it's the same with the 9-year cycles. You know, when you're at the end of a cycle, just do your spiritual work. Surrender. Don't think the world is coming to an end. It's all being released so that something new and better can come into your next cycle.
Sue, I have a question. I'm kind of getting off topic, and I'll bring us back around in a minute. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the cycle, if you're in a partnership, it doesn't have to be husband, wife, can be any kind of partnership, and one of you is in a 9-year, the surrendering, I call it the surrender year. It doesn't have to be. It can also just be new things coming in. Does the other partner, can that other partner, if they're not surrendering along with the one in the 9-year, mess up the 9-year cycle in any way, shape, or form? I've never had this question before, but it kind of comes to mind.
So I work with couples a lot, you know, and one partner is going through the 9-year and the other one is, you know, in a 3-year and they're having a great time. And the way you have to look at it is, once I know what my loved one or my business partner is going through, when I know they're in a 9-year, I know that I won't make any demands on them. I won't ask for commitment. I won't ask for them to tell me about what they're going to do next year. I'm just going to love them, listen to them, feel their pain, not freak out when they come and tell me they're moving to China and don't want to speak to anyone they know ever again, because that's how people feel in a 9-year. It's like I want to just hit the reset button and start all over. And I'm going to let them express all of that frustration, trusting that where it lands next year in the 1 year is going to be for everyone's highest good. And it helps marriages so much because, you know, women will come to me as clients and they'll go, my husband is losing his job and he's really this and that. And I go, and you can't save him. This is a lesson that he chose to go through. Your role is to be the loving, compassionate, understanding, spiritually wise listener through all of his pain. And it just helps people. And children, I'm a mom, you're a mom. When our kids, you know, my son went through a 9-year last year. It ended in December. And it was his senior year of high school, graduation. And then he went off to his first semester at college and had a heartbreak from his high school girlfriend, as always happens that first semester.
Oh.
And it nearly killed him. I mean, it just raked him through the coals. And yet when we could talk, you know, and I could talk to him about the 9-year and that things will shift in January, even though he didn't believe me, it sort of comforted him. And now, you know, it's June and his whole, everything got better in his winter semester. He, you know, let go of that girlfriend and just adjusted to college life. And I saw him go through that cycle change beautifully. And it was so helpful to understand that he was just experiencing the 9-year.
That's amazing. I also love how you bring in the seasons, because it's true. There's a surrender in the seasons. I know, oh, it's just fall, and soon winter will come, and then spring will come. But you're absolutely right. When I look at all the 9 years, and especially a 9-year, I think even myself, I go through it like it's muck, you know, like, but do you want to also talk a little bit, Sue? I don't know if you can share a little bit about the Soul Path numbers. And then you are lighting up the switchboard. We've got about nine callers that would love to talk with you. So I don't know if you feel like we have time to go through a little bit of the Soul Path numbers and what that is, and then maybe take a couple calls if we can get to them.
Well, one thing is that the numbers are, you know, they're a life's work study, as you know, Jen. And I can talk about them briefly, but I don't want people to kind of think that this is in any way really covering what they mean. But, for example, when you look at your birth date, your soul chose that day to be born on, and your soul chose the exact time of your first breath. And your soul also chooses the exact moment of your exit from the lifetime. So when you look at it that way, and again, this requires that that we step into our divine lens view of the world, not our ego view that says, oh, wait a minute, that was the doctor scheduling my cesarean. And the divine lens view says, no, because the spirit of that child was moving the doctor's hand as they penciled it into their calendar. In other words, there is a bigger divine order picture than we can grasp. So when you were born, for example, I was born September 15th, 1951, you would take every number of that birth date, 9-15, 1951, and add them all up together. And you end up with the number 22, which you and I know all about, Jen, and it's this one of those master soul numbers that's about coming in with a lot of work to do, a lot of lessons to learn for the purpose of helping raise consciousness. And when I suddenly understood that, a lot of my pain and my challenges and my gifts made a lot more sense, and it helped me to kind of surrender to the work of this lifetime. And that's a simple way of looking at it, but that's kind of the energy of the 4 and the 22.
Right. And so to wrap it back around with grief and grieving or any challenge that anybody may have in life, Sue's work is just amazing because you can look at your birthday, you can add up your numbers, and you can see there is a purpose that you came with, and that can give you a little bit of an idea, if you don't already know it, of how your life has sort of come to be. And I know for me, I found it so healing to know everything kind of made sense. Because
And the other thing I want to say is that it doesn't mean, and this is so important for people to understand, like they'll go and add up their birth date and they'll go, oh, I'm on the path of the 8, and that's about power and money and all this stuff, and I'm broke, so that doesn't make any sense. And yet, when you look at it as a soul's journey, it makes perfect sense, because here's the reason. We don't come in on a path that we've already mastered. We come in to learn. So if you've chosen a path like the number 8, which is about owning your power in the world, then it means that every lesson that hits you is going to hit you about, am I owning my power financially? Am I owning my power emotionally, spiritually, physically? And in every crisis, if the answer is no, I'm giving away my power, then you don't do it. If it's yes, I'm stepping into my power and using it benevolently to empower others, then that's the right choice for you on that 8 path. And every path is the lesson. And so for me, my lesson is if I write this book, if I do this thing in my career, am I helping shift consciousness, creating new thought, helping people view things from the divine lens? And if the answer is yes, then I have to do it. If the answer is no, it's more like drudgery work, then I know it's off path for me. I mean, I was a journalist for 20, 30 years, and a whole lot of that was drudgery work. And it was only when I embraced that I really needed to do inspirational work, the 22 is the number of inspiration, that my life and my work took off.
Yeah, and again, I love how you said this earlier. If it's part of your soul path, it's going to resonate with you. It's going to make you feel light, feel full, feel happy.
Right.
If it's not, like you said, it's going to feel like drudgery or whatever doesn't feel right to you. And
right.
The other thing, Sue, that I find fascinating and so helpful is, depending on your number, you grieve. I mean, everyone grieves differently.
Right.
But your grief
right.
can take a different turn, or what will help you heal can
exactly.
be different with each number, which was
it's
so helpful
so
for me.
It's so helpful for people to know that. You know, like I have a best girlfriend who is a Pisces one path, and she's such a beautiful, evolved soul. She came to learn about belief in herself, and she rises to the top like cream, and she creates a business, and it becomes a $1 million business. You know, she's such a brilliant visionary and entrepreneur, and yet she's deeply spiritual and intuitive. And when her father died, it was a big moment of grief for her. And, you know, her way of dealing with it is she went on her own retreat by herself to really tune inward and meditate and connect to her higher self. That's such a one-path way to recover, to be alone, to connect to the divine, to not reach out to friends for comfort. And, you know, for me as a 22, every time I've lost somebody I love, it's so weird to say this, but like a month after Paul, my husband, died, I was writing a book about it. You know, I had to start sharing ideas and thoughts that were coming to me and experiences that I'd had, and that's what a 22 is driven to do. So my healing came from writing a book, and everybody has their different way of healing from grief, and it's reflected in their path.
Yeah, this is amazing. And before we take calls, what should we say to someone, you know, if someone has lost someone recently, you know, what should we say to them, or how can we, you know, if someone is stuck on, oh gosh, how do I approach this person now, or what
right.
would be helpful? What do you
right.
think?
Well, first of all, you know, we don't go up and say the usual terrible things that people say to grieving
right.
people, because our culture
right.
is so terrified of death. I'll never forget people coming up to me and saying terrible, stupid things when I was 29 years old and grieving my husband. And one of the worst ones I remember, it's funny how these things stick with you, was somebody came up and said, well, you're young, you'll find somebody else, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, you just, you know, it's well-intentioned, but it's not where you are at the moment, you know?
Right.
Where you
right.
are at the moment is your heart has just been ripped out of you. You are devastated. You feel like you've been turned upside down, and you don't know how you're going to live through the day. And so what people need to say is, you know, I would love to just sit and listen to the story. You know, would you tell me your story of how it all happened? Because people who are grieving need to tell that story and tell every detail of it until they can't tell it anymore. And one of the problems with our world is we don't ask. We don't say, oh, how long was he sick? And tell me about it. Or, you know, where were you when you heard the news? And how did you feel? What did you do? Those are the things that we think are prying and rude to ask in our culture, but that's exactly what the grieving person needs to talk about. They need to find somebody who's going to listen and go, oh my God, you know, that day I had the weirdest feeling, and I'd had a dream the night before, and then when the phone call came, you know, I mean, let them tell that story and tell it and tell it.
Yeah, you're right. And how about Father's Day, Sue? With people who have lost dads recently, I guess it's probably the same advice, right? Because sometimes when you're passing not only the anniversary of someone's death, or if they've passed on and then there's another holiday that comes up, or a holiday that America celebrates, right?
How I want people to think of holidays and anniversaries of the death. You will always remember the day your loved one died. Paul died July 13th, and today's June 13th, and I'm already aware that we're moving towards July 13th. So, and that was 30-something years ago, so we never forget that date. And,
right.
you know,
right.
Father's Day is coming up, too, and so I'm thinking about my dad. But what we do with that is we use it to honor, like we take the day to honor our loved one, to meditate, to connect with them on the other side if we can, to talk to them, to go for a walk with them. You know, every July 13th I try to go for a walk or something where I can have a conversation with Paul. And on Father's Day I'm going to be going, Dad, you know, best thing I ever did was choose you to be my dad in this lifetime. You were so awesome, and he's going to be laughing at my side. And, you know, so those are, that's how we honor the day. The mistake people make is that they just dwell in the pain of it on that day. So they'll go, oh, it's Father's Day. My father isn't here. He is. You just have to shift your energy to feel him in a different way. He's seeing you. He's loving you. He wants to know that you love him and you honor him, not that you're sad and devastated, but that you embrace the love that you once shared. And that's how we need to honor these days.
Okay, that sounds great. Are you up for a few calls? We've got quite a few. Okay.
And we're going to need the name and date of birth.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Let me take our first, who's been waiting for quite a while. Shanti, are you there? Let me see if I can bring her on. Shanti?
Hi.
Are you there?
Hi.
We need your date of birth for Sue. Can you?
12/18/88.
I couldn't hear that. Could you say it again?
12/18/88.
Okay.
12/18/88, yep.
Mm-hmm. And so ask us your question. Tell us why you're calling.
Currently, I'm looking for job opportunities,
mm-hmm.
and I was just wondering what guidance or advice.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so interesting that you're the first caller because you're going to demonstrate for many people a lot of the things we're talking about here about the reinvention cycles, because if I've looked at this correctly, you are a Sagittarius 11, so you're a master soul on the master soul journey of the 11, and I hope you read the book to sort of learn what that means. It means you're very intuitive, very sensitive, and have many, many gifts that come from the divine realms, and you are not really meant to live the conventional life. And you're in a one personal year, which means it's the beginning of a whole new cycle. Last year, you may have been letting go of a boyfriend or a job or school or something, and you're moving into your first Saturn return. So, Shanti, you got a lot going on right now,
girl.
We
didn't even cover Saturn returns. Yeah.
So, Shanti, what happened last year?
A lot happened. I hadn't had good relationships. Did not work out last year. I just switched school because I was confused on what I wanted to do.
Right.
And I started a new school, and hopefully this is gonna send me further in my future.
Yeah. So you're in.
Shanti,
are you in school right now? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And are you studying, tell me what you're studying.
Right now I'm studying healthcare administration.
Perfect.
So
let me just say, you're headed in the right direction with healthcare administration, meaning your soul is kind of getting you into the right category here, healthcare. And someday, probably after your Saturn return, and that means more when you're 29 and 30, you'll then decide that maybe you want to become more involved with the patients one-on-one, become some kind of a healer, and maybe even alternative healer in the future. But to start with healthcare administration is a good start for you because you're good with people. You know, you care about others. You care about patients and well-being. And this will kind of launch you in the right direction for now. And don't be surprised if in 3 or 4 years when you get through this Saturn return, you're saying, you know, I need it to be more meaningful. I need to have more one-on-one with people and know that I'm making a difference. Because at the end of the day, Shanti, you really are a healer and an intuitive. And as you get more confident in your life, you will use those gifts for your living.
Okay.
And Shanti, I hope you go out and really, if you can, get Sue's books. She's got 3 of them. You know, I see your soulmate is one, but for you,
I think
I see your dream job. If you can pick up, right, Sue, if she can pick up, I see your dream job. I mean, really, because Sue, you're able to explain it so well in the books, and it just really, I know for me, it totally changed my life. I did it. And you're so much younger meeting Sue or working with Sue. It's fantastic. You know,
and Shanti, one more thing I'll say to you is that because of your deep sensitivity, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. because of your deep sensitivity, you get your feelings hurt easily, and that I want you to know that's your gift, because I know you think that that's your flaw, and I want you to understand that that's just showing you that you can sense how other people feel. And someday you'll learn to use that sensitivity to know what others are feeling so that you can help them.
Okay.
I love that.
Thank you.
Phenomenal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shanti. Thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to put her back on hold. Sue, I love that for her and for everyone that's sensitive. Right? Like, you're right.
Right.
Sometimes we look at that as a flaw, or as children, they'll say, oh, she's so shy, she's so this, or he's so that, and you're absolutely right. That's going to help them be empathic.
I mean, they are feeling, you know, any kid who is supposedly shy or too emotional or too sensitive, it means that they are feeling so much. They are taking in so many impressions from everybody around them that it's overwhelming them. They don't know what to do with it. And, you know, when you talk about the introverted, the shy, the sensitive, our culture thinks, oh, these people are, you know, not going to be successful in life. They're too shy. They are empaths. They're our healers. They're our intuitives. They're the ones who sense, they walk into a room and they instantly sense what everybody's feeling in that room. And it can be overwhelming until they learn, and this is why everybody should be meditating, please. Shanti, please learn to meditate, to quiet the mind once a day and tap into your higher self, your intuition. Learn how to use that quietness to reconnect to your wisdom. It's so helpful for people who are sensitive and intuitive.
Well, and especially for kids, Sue, and you and I have talked about this before, in terms of the personal years, if you go by the school year, you'll start your school year in one, and then January you'll flip to another. And that could be totally fine, but it's so interesting to me because I will have my kids' years mapped out, and so I'll kind of know who's in what year and when it shifts. But I never thought about that. One year I was taking one of your courses, and I went, holy cow. Like, for adults, it's January to January, and, you know, we just sort of, I feel like we just sort of move on through. But for kids, you've got the summer months, and then it leads up to school, and it's sort of right in there. So I find that fascinating.
And, you know, it's so true to watch that. I mean, we watched that with our son, Kai. You know, his first semester at college was part of his 9 year, and he was really, really having a hard time. We were all very concerned about him. Next semester, he's in a 1 year. He's like a different kid. He's completely happy. You know, he makes all these great choices for himself. It's just like night and day. And I think that's a great blessing of where that school year happens, because it means that everybody in the kids in their school years, they're going to have different experiences within the same year.
Yeah,
so that
energy.
one year
yeah,
won't be like if you had a whole year of your freshman year, all your 9 year,
oh,
I don't
horrendous.
Think anybody would make it through college, you know?
I agree. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, and you know, everybody gets a little bit of that holiday break, so you can come off and
exactly.
start fresh.
Come
Absolutely.
Home, refresh, you know, and you hit the January 1st reset button and everything changes.
No, absolutely. Okay, let's try to do a couple more calls here. Like I said, you've got 10 callers. Hold on 1 second. Okay. Hi, thanks for calling
cheating.
In to speak with Sue. Are you there?
I'm talking about you.
Hi.
Embarrassing myself. I could go in there and steal it.
Let me come back to them, Sue. Hold on. I'll put them back on hold. Let's try this person. Hold on. Hi, are you there? Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
You're on with Sue. Can we have your name and your birthday, please?
Yes, first of all, hi, Sue, and thank you for taking my call. Okay.
Hi.
My birthday is September 1st, 1965, and my name is Sharon.
And Sharon, tell us why you're calling.
Well, I want to see what you can pick up. If I'm going to reach my goal, I've been looking for employment.
Let me just check.
And I know
and
I'm in an 8
here.
Year. I know a little bit about it, but I thought 8s were supposed to be a good year. This has been one of the worst years in years for me.
So I'm adding it all 4 ways. Does it come up as a 22? Because I'm getting 4. I'm adding it the other ways to see. Do you know if it's 22 or 4?
Oh, I don't know about that.
15. Let me just see here.
Is it a 22?
Oh, it is 22. 10, 17.
Okay.
Yeah. So
isn't
she's
it,
a Virgo 22. How
interesting. Oh, my God. Sharon, congratulations. You and I share this. Same thing.
That's right. And me,
said.
I'm a Virgo 22.
But
yeah.
You're such a light 22 Virgo. I so want to be like you. I'm telling you.
I don't think so. You don't live with me. You don't know. But here's what's interesting about Sharon. We have another person calling in their – oh, wait. Let me make sure here. I'm not adding – I'm trying to move too fast. So you are in your 8 year, just like you said, right, Sharon?
Yeah, that's all I know. Yes, but I always thought eights were supposed to be good years.
Well, actually, don't say good or bad. Think of it this way. The eight is when your issues on the table are going to be about power and money. So what that means is if you're on path, if you're doing the work you're here to do, it'll be about going to the bank to reap the benefits of that. If you've been off path, in the wrong career, not living to your highest soul potential, then you've got your debts there that are going to have to be dealt with. It's the year of dealing with those money and power issues. So did you say you're looking for a new job?
Yes.
And what do you do for a living?
I do administrative work. I've always been in like investments, financial, banking,
mm-hmm.
insurance, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So, Jen,
yeah,
you and I can tell this Virgo 22 that what's going to happen this year and next year is she's really going to be called and nudged to step up to a new level of her work. Girlfriend, Sharon, you are a metaphysical girl.
Right.
You could be an intuitive coach. You could be, you know, Jen and I are both Virgo 22s. You're a Virgo 22. It's no accident that you're calling in. You can do work like we're doing, and you've been holding yourself back. You've been just focusing on the drudgery, so to speak, of the hard work. You're very responsible. You're very smart. And it's this 8 year now is calling you to start owning your power and shifting up into a greater level of this master soul path. And next year is your 9 year. And what we want that to be is you letting go of the old ways that you've defined yourself doing admin and all these different things and really surrendering to your spiritual self, taking classes, getting ready so that when your 1 year hits, you are out in the world as a coach, a writer, a healer, all of these things.
Absolutely.
Do you see me finding employment, though? Or
you're going to find a job, but it's not going to make you happy, and it's not going to last long. And during that experience, you're going to be starting to take some other courses and explore some other ideas. Have you, Sharon, ever taken, you know, a course? Have you looked into courses to become any kind of a coach or anything like that?
No, I haven't. But, you know, in my jobs, I could train people, too. You know what I mean?
So you've had the experience of being out with people, teaching them and seeing how good you are at that.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just going to go up to the next level in the next couple of years. So I would urge you to consider something like find a weekend training of becoming a life coach, okay? That would be a good baby step. And you learn some processes of life coaching. You can use them in your job to manage people, and you can start seeing how it feels to maybe work with a client on a weekend and coach them with their life and have them go, wow, that really, really helped me, and, you know, and start learning that you can do that kind of work. For you, it's always going to be the alternatives, alternative health, alternative spirituality, alternative careers, where you're going to find your sweet spot.
I see what you mean. Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Sharon, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Listen, have a good day. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Sue, I love that. The 22-4. I wanted to ask her, but I know we're running out of time. If she ever felt like she fit in, because I know as a master soul,
I know.
You know, oftentimes we don't, and oftentimes, sometimes that 22-4 will take that financial road, which is terrific and great and served her well. Now I hope she takes off and does that, because, you know, I can imagine her soul is just, you know, wanting to get out there and help.
I mean,
in a very different
way. It's so interesting that our two callers, Shanti is on the 11 Master Soul Path, and she's just beginning her journey, and Sharon is on the 22, and she's starting into that new cycle that leads to the second Saturn return. So they both are at great turning points for really stepping up to their Master Soul journeys here.
Yeah, and I hope they, and as well as all of our other listeners, go out and please order Sue's book. Go to the bookstore and get it. It's Bridges to Heaven, True Stories of Loved Ones on the Other Side. But you also have I See Your Soulmate and I See Your Dream Job. All of these books have your framework, but every single one of them looks at it from a different lens, and they are all helpful. I've got them all. And Sue, I know you're doing workshops coming up. Do you want to tell our
listeners
about that?
I have a lot of webinars. I have webinars next weekend. I'm training career intuitive coaches on a webinar, so that's for anybody anywhere in the world can join in.
Sharon.
And you can learn about all of that on my website, and my website is suefrederick.com.
Yeah. And I've, as I said, I've taken all three of them, and I love them. They are life-changing. They really are. And Sharon, if you're listening, I hope you think, just consider that, see where your intuition takes you with something like that, because Sue, you're just amazing. Your work is so healing. And
Thank you so much.
We have so many more callers, and I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody in the hour. I hope you'll come back on, Sue. I know how busy you are, but if you ever
I would love to. And tell those callers to visit my website, and they can email me from there and, you know, see if I can help them.
Yeah, absolutely, because Sue's work, it really is life-changing. Sue, thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
And we'll definitely be in touch. Okay.
Thank you so much, Jen. Okay.
Okay, bye now.
In the beginning, I must look at who I am right now. In the beginning, I must see who I will allow. I am taking a journey. I am willing to be. I am trusting the light in me. In the beginning, I am right now. In the beginning, I must see who I am.